This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Luke and Dave. We are back with the newest installment of our Binge With Us series. Today, we'll be covering episodes 5 and 6 of Netflix's The Haunting of Bly Manor. 5 and 6 were still really, really good, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm still hooked.
Absolutely. 5 was a little confusing at first until like the last 10, 15 minutes, as Luke was talking about earlier on, before the podcast. So I was a little like mind blown a little bit towards 5, but 6 was great. I could follow easily during 6.
I am so excited to watch episode 7 as soon as we're done recording this podcast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because 5 was classic mid-season twist, and it was a little bit more predictable than Haunting of Hill House, but it was still had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. It was so good. I loved all the answers. We did a good job of covering parts of it in the earlier podcast episodes, but some of it still blew my mind. And 6, man, 6 was in its own way incredible. I loved all the character growth of Henry Wingrave on screen. Growth isn't the right word, just seeing him a lot. We didn't get to see him at all. He was fucking awesome. Holy shit, I loved young Hugh from the first season. So let's get right into it, because I want to talk about all of this.
So we start off with a hot mama voiceover. The housekeeper knew, more than most, that Deep Experience was never peaceful. And because she knew this, ever since she'd first called Bly home, she would always find her way back to peace within her daily routine. And it had always worked. Always.
And we pick up right with Mrs. Gross being distant, as she's been shown to be the first couple episodes, at the bonfire, which was the end of last episode. And this episode is a little weird. It's going to be fun for us to cover, but it's also going to sound kind of confusing because we're going to be going back and forth to all these different scenes over and over again. So we'll try not to be too repetitive, but I was happy that we're going to get the Gross episode. We knew this was coming because we needed to know what her deal was with all the cracks she was seeing in the wall, why she was always distant, what the deal was with her food. And nice job, B-Toms. Almost there. It was a good observation, but we didn't get to the right conclusion.
We're never going to shame anybody for a theory that doesn't pay off here. We just put on the tinfoil hats and we just speculate wildly. And that was me swinging a miss on the Mrs. Gross trying to feed something. But though I digress. So this is actually a recurring scene that we'll keep coming back to, is Hannah and Owen sharing wine by the bonfire. I think this and the interview with Owen are kind of her anchor memories, if you will. And we keep returning to these.
It's really important because the dialogue in the beginning is the end of their conversation, or it's actually the unseen part of their conversation, which ends with Danny and Jamie walking up to the bonfire. Mm-hmm. And this is their talk about going to Paris and leaving Bly Manor and starting a new, you know, fun, exciting life while they can. And we're going to find out by the end that the reason that this is important to us and we didn't see this full conversation is because Mrs. Gross is going to realize that she cannot leave Bly Manor.
Yeah. She physically is stuck there.
Yeah. It was funny. Owen's exact words. I think Mrs. Gross asks, what could someone like me do in Paris? He says, eat croissant. Oh my goodness. Eat croissants, drink good wine, and live, Hannah, live. And it's ironic because she can't eat. She's a ghost. She can't drink wine because she's a ghost. She's declined alcohol before, and she can't live. She's a ghost. So he just lists 3 things that she inherently cannot do in Paris.
And she herself doesn't realize it yet, which is going to be the point of all these time loops, forcing it. And the show did a good job of putting this in her face. That's why I think we picked up on a lot of the early scenes that we were supposed to get clues from. But I don't know. I did not see this coming.
We were shipping these two, Owen and Mrs. Gross as Groen in the last podcast.
Wow.
But obviously this kind of cancels that notion because one of them is dead. The other is still kind of a mystery, honestly. Like, we'll get into it a little bit, I guess.
Before this episode, I did not think that their relationship was anything past brother sister. And it came out of left field for me. I did not see them going the romantic route, but that's what it was supposed to be, right? Those were the vibes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And plus, I think in earlier episodes, there were notions of her saying, like, oh, I'm like too old, basically, like for Owen. So there was like a clear age difference between them.
Yeah, and they also say in the earlier episodes that Owen can get any girl he wants in all of Bly County.
And he chooses Mrs. Gross of all of them.
Whatever. She's awesome anyway.
Yeah, she is awesome.
We had that scene, and it was either 3 or 4 where Mrs. Gross is like sleeping on his shoulder, and that was kind of a thing. And Jamie says, wouldn't you fancy that to be you instead of Miss Gross to Danny?
So let's go into the first flashback we get post the bonfire talk. And this is where Owen meets Hannah for the first time in Bly Manor. And this is the interview we're going to see, I think, 4 times.
Yeah, it's at least.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
We keep coming back to this one.
We see her, and she's acting distant as she's known to do. And forgets what Charlotte Wingrave asked her to do. And just for podcast references, Charlotte and Dominic are the parents,
yes,
quote unquote parents, yeah, of Miles and Flora. So what happens is this takes place, I think, 1 year before the parents died, and we get that information because they say the age of Miles and Flora are
I thought 7 and 5.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wrote it down, but I think it's 5 and they're 2 years apart,
five,
right?
Seven.
Five and seven. And yeah, yeah. So I think this is roughly a year before the accident.
Mm-hmm.
And Owen tells Hannah about the state of his mother during the interview, and they're just kind of going back and forth. She's trying to get a feel for who Owen is.
Just because she wants to know why he wants to come to Bly. Like, he was in France for all this time. He's hyping it up, and now he's back in Bly. But yeah, because of his mom.
He immediately says, I just want to be close to home. And then she prods more, and he's starts revealing that his mom has dementia, says she just couldn't recognize
yesterday,
me, thought mistook me
thought
for my grandfather. So yeah, that's why Owen is here. And he's telling this to Hannah.
Basically, the conversation ends with Owen talking about this famous quote from, what was his name, Thomas
Merton,
just about like transcendence and how we only use, you know, parts of our front brain, and if you can maybe activate the back brain, it could maybe be a cure for dementia.
He related it to his mom with dementia.
It was a really good quote. I just didn't write it down.
Losing the ability of the front of her brain, and while she was losing that, he said it's revealing more of the stuff underneath, and maybe that's this transcendence that Thomas Merton was talking about. It was kind of a cool quote.
Definitely. Owen's so smooth.
Yeah,
love Owen.
And then someone in the background just calls out Mrs. Gross, and that transitions us to the next flashback as she walks through the door to, you know, answer the call. I think it transitions us.
So it's her in the quote unquote old wing, but now it just looks like the wing, because she's being informed that the Wingraves are here, and we learn that it is the parents, Dominic and Charlotte. Peter and Henry are arriving in 2 cars to Bly Manor. And this is the first time we see Charlotte and Dominic. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is another quick scene where she comes to after realizing that they arrived, mm-hmm, and she wakes up later that night. Right.
It's literally as she walks back into Bly Manor from greeting the parents out of their cars, taking their luggage, she opens the doors and the foyer is completely dark. It was just the middle of the day and now it's nighttime. Excuse me. She turns around and walks back outside and she just starts like wailing.
She has a mental breakdown.
That was really freaky.
I did not get that at all. But of course, we get some answers right away where Charlotte comes up behind her asking her if she's OK. And this is where she divulges the information about her husband.
It's her husband. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've been wondering about this because I think she's mentioned that a couple times already. And what she says to Charlotte is that her husband, Sam, he's not dead, but he ran away with another girl and,
mm-hmm,
you know, just completely left Hannah out to dry.
Yeah. What's the mom's name again?
Charlotte.
Charlotte, like, offers her a place at Bly Manor.
You
just
can
like, you can stay here.
Bly.
It was kind of creepy how she said forever, too.
Forever, if you'd like.
Yeah, that was, like, really
it
weird.
It was creepy. There was a little bit of an implication there. Mm-hmm. But that's really all for that scene. And then we get a flash to Miles, Jamie, and Mrs. Gross. And Mrs. Gross seems like an afterthought in this scene, but it's Jamie up on a ladder doing some work on the greenhouse roof, something like that. And Miles runs up and starts jiggling around the ladder underneath her. She gets down and gets super pissed at Miles and says, "I will fucking end you, you little shite."
Yeah. So he's really clearly funny. Peter in this scene. Yeah, just this fucking is around.
Obviously Peter at this point.
I love Jamie. I love her so much. I think she might be my favorite character right now in all of Bly through the first six episodes. So
I'm still Owen.
I like Owen a lot too.
I was Owen until these last two episodes.
I gotta be honest, my favorite character is probably Flora.
She's great.
Really?
Too.
She's fantastic. I mean, after episode six, I can see why. There was a bonfire, rehashing the bonfire.
Yes,
sorry, my bad. I did miss
that. There's nothing really to talk about, I don't think, in that bonfire scene.
Did you guys pick up, in this one specifically, she like snaps her neck when she changes from one scene to the next. After
I did notice
the
that.
Jamie and Miles scene, she has the migraine and there's like a crack sound.
No, but that's
amazing.
I think
that's signifying her like dying in the well. Like
100%.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I didn't even notice that.
But yeah, the bonfire scene's really nothing, honestly.
It's just another...
Owen says something about moments.
And she finishes the sentence for him, and like as if she's been in this
situation.
It's kind
of cool because Owen says something like moments are meant to be a little bit like chapters, and she starts to kind of question chapters. No, that's
not a good
word.
She looks at the wine bottle,
it.
And then that transitions to her vacuuming in the hallway, and then... Yeah.
Let's just keep this going. So Mrs. Gross is now vacuuming in the hallway of the manor, and she observes Becca and Peter kind of reconciling over that Owen batter incident. And I haven't listened to 3-4 yet, but hopefully you completely shit on Peter for blowing that batter out of proportion.
That we completely, we're just like, fuck this guy. He's obviously a creep at this
point.
Dude,
I was all in for his character until that scene. Mm-hmm. Like, he was good for Rebecca slightly. I mean,
we knew he wasn't a good person because Mrs. Gross has been saying he's such a horrible human being this whole time. Yeah. Anyway, she is kind of being a peeping Tom through the crack in the door for this scene and observing them burying the hatchet over this and getting over it and hugging each other. And then Peter sees Mrs. Gross, quote unquote, spying on them, and he follows her out. She goes back to her vacuuming and Peter follows her out and says, "Honestly, Hannah, you should give the vacuum a rest. Just live a little." He walks away, and for the first time this episode, she sees the crack in the wall, and she goes over to investigate the crack, and she comes to in the covered up old wing to find Peter.
Yep, and Peter is digging through what appears to be Charlotte's dresser right next to her bedside, and he seems to grab a necklace or something of some sort, and Hannah starts to interrogate him, basically, "All right, like, what are you doing with that? I know what you're up to here. You're just taking things that don't belong to you," all that kind of stuff, and Peter's just more and more of his evil side we're getting shown.
This conversation that Peter and Hannah have really shows the core of Peter Quinn's character. Yep. He's very aware that the English classism is a huge thing in their society.
Yep.
And he keeps talking to Hannah, saying that we're the same. We're the help. We're never going to be viewed as anything else but that. We're lower people to these rich Wingraves.
And he warns her to stop thinking of the kids as her family. You know, naturally, now that the parents are out of the way, she might fall into that role. But he advises her to not get too close to them.
And he also threatens her with his leverage with Henry Wingrave, saying, "I can have you thrown out of here and fired at any time."
And she's like, "No, I'll be here long when you and you're long gone, basically." So she's standing her ground. I like how she stands her ground. Like, we saw it against the cop too, and the last, what was it, four or whatever, when she you know, talks back to him, and now she's standing her ground against Peter. She doesn't give a fuck, man. I like Mrs. Gross.
The first podcast episode, I did a lot of name calling towards Hannah, calling her sketchy constantly.
She was sketchy, though.
I was not wrong about that.
She was sketchy.
She had something up.
I was reserved in saying that I really liked her because of the sketchy side of her, and I didn't want something bad to come out a couple episodes down and then me regret liking her. But I'm happy that this episode explains the sketchiness in a way that I can still really enjoy her character. And I think Hannah's awesome.
Does she see another crack?
She does. Right after the Peter fight, she sees the crack in the wall, and this flashes to nighttime with muddy footprints on the floor, being the Lady of the Lake.
It exchanges the crack in the wall to a crack in a rock, I believe, and gets us outside.
Yeah,
she sees the footy, muddy footprints, the footy footprints. That's funny. And she sees Miss Jessel standing at the foot of the lake. Yeah. And that's a pretty quick one.
Yep.
That's all that happens there. And then it's back again to this Owen interview. This is the second time we revisit this interview. And she notices that it's the second time. She says, wait, haven't we done this before? And Owen responds with, yes, but we have to do it again. And she says, well, why do we have to do it again? And he says, you tell me. Even here, I was questioning to myself, is this the real Owen? And is he aware of what's going on? Or is this Owen a projection of...
It's a I think we can call him memories at this point in time, because I think
it is.
Yeah. So it's a memory, but it's a little more intricate because the memories themselves know they're in a memory. It's weird. It's Inception kind of thing. Like, who knows what's going on?
Did you guys think at this point early in the episode, were you already thinking that Hannah was dead?
Yes. I think we were talking about it a lot on the podcast, and Paul was bringing up some good points. She's got to be dead. Like, and plus Miles had said that thing where it's like, I had a dream that I was hurting you. And I was saying that, who knows, maybe that was real.
Yeah.
And
this is haunting. Happened. Whenever someone's acting not 100%, my mind immediately goes to their ghost.
Yeah.
This is true. Haunting. Yeah. There's ghosts everywhere. But Owen starts to kind of talk to her like a therapist. He says, tell me more about Miles. Is he ever cruel? And Mrs. Gross is insistent that he's a good boy and would never do anything to hurt me. And Owen kind of catches her and said, why would your mind go there? He would never do anything to hurt me. I didn't say anything like that. And it starts to get a little bit weird.
And he's probing about Miles, too, which I thought was interesting, not Flora.
What I was saying was that the whole purpose of this episode is that the house itself, I don't know if it's the ghost within the house or maybe it's just the essence of Bly Manor that's haunted, is trying to get Hannah to realize that, one, she's not alive anymore, and that, two, Miles is evil. So that's the point of this first interview, is they're trying to say, like, wake up, pay attention, Miles is cruel. Why is Miles like this?
Yeah, he has his moments sometimes. Why is it only sometimes that he's a bad person and most of the time he's a good guy?
And that perfectly transitions us back to the aftermath of when Miles was messing with Jamie's ladder right after he was done with the, you know, smoking the cig. He's Peter at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mrs. Gross thinks he's just trying to be like Peter because he has his lighter, he's playing with it a little bit. Yeah, he's trying to smoke a cigarette, and she's saying,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's probing him like he's gone, but he's smiling because he's like, she doesn't know that I am him. I'm right here.
And when she starts calling him out on these kind of things, Miles takes off and sprints right towards the chapel. Mm-hmm. And Hannah is running after him, trying to catch up to Miles. And she walks through the front of the chapel door and her outfit switches right away, which signifies it's a completely different memory and a completely different time.
Anytime she walks through a door, it seems to transition mm-hmm. memories.
That was good. You pointed that out. They make it obvious with the outfit changes, which was very helpful to us, the audience, because mm-hmm. it's so difficult to keep track of these.
Especially when Mrs. Gross comes in saying, like, have you seen Miles? And Charlotte's
it's Charlotte.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense for how we've seen Hannah the first four episodes at this point, because every time you see her, she's distant. She doesn't really know what she was doing or what was going on. It's because she's always in these loops and she's constantly jumping from memory to memory. So she never knows what the hell she was doing.
Yeah. She doesn't even know why she's getting looped around like this.
It's fucking crazy, man.
But after a couple seconds, it's like we've seen her before. She just kind of comes to in the middle of a scene, but she falls into it. And then eventually she gets her footing and acts like she's always been there.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Case in point, we find out, I know Luke and I were talking about it on the first episode, we find out who the fourth candle mm-hmm. is for that Mrs. Gross has been lighting, and it's for this guy, Sam. And Mrs. Gross says, you know, Charlotte, you don't usually light remembrance candles for the living. And Charlotte says, but for him, we'll make a special case. Was it explicitly said that he left for another woman?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
And I don't think there's much more about that because she's dead. I don't think Sam's going to come back into play at any point this season. But that's the whole point. It was foreshadowed all the way back in episode two that her husband to her is dead.
And this is where she has Luke. This is where she has the denial. She's just like, oh, he's just going through a phase. He'll be back.
Right,
and she's like, no, he's gone.
And while she's having this conversation with Charlotte, I don't even know how they transition. She looks away for a second. And when she looks back, it's another scene. And this is in the chapel still. But now she's sitting next to Rebecca Jessel. Mm-hmm. And it's a different day because, is it because of the outfit?
Another outfit change. She was wearing something white and now she's wearing something brown.
Not too big, but Charlotte offers to make the position live in the last scene, which is a thing. That's how she is now living in Bly Manor officially.
Well, technically not.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
she was living in Bly Manor up until recently. Rips in the chat.
So when Hannah is talking to Rebecca in the pew, it's clear that Hannah doesn't like Peter. And she's trying to convince Rebecca that
to
he's
see
terrible
it.
For yeah, her
to see it that he is a thief and a liar and he's just playing her like a fiddle.
Hannah says, if I'm being honest, Peter scares the shit out of me. She says that, and she's not a woman who would ever curse. And Rebecca agrees. She says, yeah, he is scary, but he's exciting, and I've never felt more alive. And she says, there's a difference between feeling good and feeling alive.
And she also emphasizes that he always tells her that, you know, she's better than what she is. So that makes her feel really good.
I'm so team Miss Gross in this conversation.
100%,
I want Rebecca to see it so bad. I love that Hannah calls her out on a contradiction because she says, I've never been with a man like him before.
Yeah.
And then she says later on, I've never met. What am I trying to say?
No, she's never met anyone like him.
She's trying to say, I've been with men like him before.
Saying she can handle it.
Yes, after previously saying, I've never met anyone like him in my life. And Miss Gross says, you can't have it both ways like that.
And she storms out, just refusing to see anything that Mrs. Gross is telling her.
And Mrs. Gross follows right behind her. And this is a little bit of a special transition because something weird, like she opens the door to follow Rebecca, and it is the bottom of the well. If you guys didn't notice that, like the wall is stone and it's the dripping noise of the well.
Yeah, yeah, it
so
is.
It's literally just a
nice
end of the episode foreshadowing. And also Miles/Peter is in the corner of the chapel at this room at this point, just lighting the sig.
Yep.
And that triggers the next flash to
the Bly Manor kitchen.
Yep.
And Miss Jessel is refusing to taste Owen's sauce from the spoon.
She learned
because of the batter incident. And luckily because Peter comes right into the room and they kind of start kissing.
Hey, Bex, can I borrow you for a moment?
Yeah. And they start like making out, moving into the other room. And that leaves us with just Mrs. Gross and Owen.
And Mrs. Correct? Gross is just, still just continuing to let her emotions out on Peter, letting it be known that she just doesn't fuck with him.
And then she goes into this little story about the mouse trap and the glue trap in the basement. And this is just a huge symbolism for what Peter is for Rebecca. And it's kind of ironic because it's what Miles becomes for Peter by the end of the episode, too. So it's just linked. It's, this is haunting. This is what they do.
Symbolism. It's really nice. Yeah.
Nothing else there, really, right? We just flash back to the interview, and this is the third time we're in the interview.
Yep. And just more confusion on my end from here.
A lot of meta awareness starts to happen in these memories.
Because Owen
brings up glue trap.
No, I think she does. And he's like, that hasn't happened. That conversation hasn't happened yet. That's not supposed to happen.
I thought he uses the term. He says, I'll be stuck in this glue trap of a town my whole life.
He does.
Oh, okay. He does.
And then Hannah says, but we haven't talked about this yet, have we?
Oh, right.
And then he says, but we will. Mm-hmm. She's all just, what am I trying to say?
She's all over the place. She doesn't get the message that the ghosts are trying to give to her yet, even though they're throwing it in her face, but she's getting there slowly, which is why we're only at the third interview of the four. I think, might be cuttable, but is there the word familiarity dropped in this conversation? Did either of you pick up on that?
I can't remember.
Because
I know denial was the big word that he like screamed.
Yeah. Maybe I was just trying to link at how she's experiencing deja vu, basically, right?
Yes.
She doesn't know that it's a memory right away when she's talking to Owen for the third time. And I was thinking, is this the same sort of situation at why Danny was familiar? Remember the voiceover from Hot Mama, why Danny was familiar with Jamie the first time they met? Do you remember that in the first scene?
Yeah.
Like they didn't actually say hello, nice to meet you. They just acted like they knew each other. And then also in the first episode, when Danny arrives at Bly, she says it felt familiar. The whole manner. Is this her? Are we seeing her live
Danny's
part of this over again?
And that would make sense because the end of episode 6 certainly leads us to believe that Danny might be dead. So
she
this
totally
might be,
could be
a very rational, she was revisiting her memories of meeting Jamie, but they already knew each other. So they didn't like
exactly
each other the what's up.
I might be reading into it too much, but that's a thing, right?
No, that's a possible thing.
Yeah. When you say it like that, it honestly sounds really good to me. But
yeah.
I'm stuck up on that interaction with Jamie and Danny for the first time because we haven't gotten anything about it since.
That's totally what it is.
I hope so. That'd be cool.
High five right here.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I bolded that line in my notes. I was like, I got to bring this up. All right. So anyway, after they get out of the third Owen interview, this has Hannah leaving. She just stands up and leaves the room and
she
it transitions.
She gets a little frantic. It looks like she's
getting worried
understand.
A little bit. Yeah.
She says, this is morbid. And
the ghost
just
is trying
leaves.
To tell her, is it the scene where he's telling her, like, don't go out the door? Or regardless, he's like, be careful out there. They're trying to tell her basically like when mm-hmm. it's okay to transition almost, it seems like.
But the transition here is a cut to Mrs. Gross in Peter and Miss Rebecca's bedroom.
And she's not tan. She's not seen in this scene. Every other scene we've had, everyone recognizes her and like has conversations with her. This is the first one we get where she's completely unnoticed. But yeah, it's just her staring down Peter and Rebecca, who are sharing a nice little moment of after sex, I guess, or you know.
Yeah, they're just waking up. I think it's them just waking up, whatever. And Peter's talking to Rebecca, saying he's never had family, money, or love in his life until he met her. And he starts planting the seeds for his plan of what he wants to do. He wants to essentially rob the Wingraves.
But he doesn't say rob. He just says, I have a way of making.
He doesn't reveal the means of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what he's getting at. And he wants to take her and go to America because, as I mentioned earlier, he's very aware of the English classism. Is that the right word? Classism?
Probably.
Like I mean, racism, sense. Classism. That's kind of what it is, classism. Right? Because that's how
it is.
Peter views it. That they have no chance of really jumping the classes as long as they're here.
Classism, prejudice against or in favor of people belonging to a particular
there you
status.
Go. So he wants to go to America because he knows that in America, as long as you have money, you can make it, which is
kind of true.
Shitty if you're us right now.
I mean, we've seen it through all like the big CEOs, you know, like they say they start from nothing, but it's really money. So
they're taking shots at us, boys. Yeah, what do we say to that?
They took a couple shots at Americans.
I'm a very wealthy man.
Anyway, so Peter leaves the room, right? And it's just left.
The last thing he says is, grab your things. I'm going to go do something.
Yeah.
Come back. And then tomorrow we'll go.
Okay.
And he also tells her that he loves her. Did he say that in a previous episode?
I don't think so, actually, because I think I made a mental note that he said, I love you. I think that's the first time we heard that. But he walks out of the room, which leaves us with Mrs. Gross and Rebecca alone, and Rebecca starts talking to Mrs. Gross as if she's been there the whole time and says, this is one of my favorites. He's so much himself in this one before it all went bad, but I've never seen you in this one. How did you manage to slip in? And then she says, don't go out there, referencing the hallway. I think it's about to happen.
Before we continue on, though, there was another quote that I loved. What Rebecca says is, I don't find myself in this one too often. So what that implies is that it's actually Miss Jessel's ghost there, because the ghosts are reliving their memories constantly. That's kind of like the theme of ghosts, I guess. And when she acknowledges Hannah, she's also acknowledging another ghost being in a memory. I just think that whole idea is written really well.
Yeah.
At what's going on with the ghosts and how they're aware of each other at points, but then also going through the motions of living these fake memories. I like it all. And the next part we have here is that Rebecca...
This was my favorite scene of this episode.
Okay.
We get Peter and the kids are in the hallway. The kids, obviously, Flora and Miles. Miles says he heard something downstairs and Flora's dollhouse is doing something strange. Peter starts walking to the old wing to take the jewelry. He starts robbing the Wingraves like he alluded to doing. And he comes back with the necklace. He put it in his pocket and the kids are still in the hallway. He's just kind of standing in the middle of the hallway, and out of nowhere, the Lady of the Lake just Undertaker chokeholds him.
Holy shit.
Scared the shit out of me.
And even before she gets to the end of the hallway, he's kicking and screaming, trying to get out of her chokehold, and he's already dead. Can't even breathe by the end of the hallway.
Super strength, baby.
My God, dude, that was a creepy scene and good payoff for the threat of the Lady of the Lake. And that really explains the earlier episodes when the kids are trying to protect Danny from leaving her room so much, because this girl will fuck you up.
Because it was 100%. Really confusing, too, because she drags the body first back into the wing, and then he walks out.
Acting like nothing happened.
Yeah, but then we see she still has his body and dragging it out to the lake eventually.
He walks over to Flora, who has the talisman of the Lady of the Lake, and he's being weird trying to hold it. Am I reading into something?
No, I didn't get it. That was important,
because
but I don't understand
why. It was like it wasn't tangible, but eventually
he could touch it. Yeah, which
was
weird.
It almost seemed weird. I don't know. That was something, though, right?
Definitely something. And let me ask you guys, do you think there was a reason behind the Lady of the Lake killing him, or was it the sole fact that he was awake in the house at night and out there?
That was my first impression. Unless you pitch something to me right now, I think that was my only impression.
All right, I'll give you my best pitch, because my only thought is that there could be a link to the Lady of the Lake potentially being Charlotte and her caring about him stealing that jewel. right? Because she doesn't come out and grab him until that jewel's in his hand.
She does kind of have the hair of Charlotte as well. Like, it's a brunette, dark hair.
The face is white, so we don't know. Could be, right? Is that something?
Yeah,
could it be linked to that jewel? Yeah,
no, yeah. I love
it. Put
it
on the board.
No, I love it. Yeah, put it on the board.
Jury's still out. That's a theory. Put it on the board.
That was actually off the dome. I did not even write that
down.
But
I like how they make you question it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just a matter of, you know, whether...
wrong place, wrong time, or there could be a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Because as a normal viewer, I just saw it as wrong place, wrong time. They were always trying to save people from, you know, not interacting with her. But now, so yeah, I like it.
One of the bigger mysteries is what happened to all these ghosts' faces.
Yeah. That's going to be a
we have no clue what's going on with that.
Twist,
so yes, any of the ghosts could be anybody.
Maybe it's the face stealer from Avatar.
But anyway, when the Lady of the Lake comes back out holding Peter's dead body and Ghost Peter is looking at this, she's walking down the steps, you know, tracking her footprints and dragging him down. But what Flora says out loud is the others stay away from her. And that's important because, one, that means that she's been ghost woke for a while at this point. Her and Miles, they're aware that the ghosts are there, and they also are aware that any ghosts that they interact with don't fuck with the Lady of the Lake. And that makes sense. Because Flora's always trying to keep the doll out of the house, but she's fine with all the other ghosts.
Are they ghosts good ghosts then? Like Casper's, I guess? Like,
we don't have a lot of confirmation, but we know that Flora is trying to become friends with some of the ghosts because of her interactions with the little boy in the next episode, really. Mm-hmm. So as far as we know right now through episode 6, yes, she is trying to make friends with all of these ghosts. Yeah. But that specific quote, the others say stay away from her, leads me to believe that most of the ghosts are friendly.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that that holds water, especially with Henry Wingrave talking in the next episode about his ghost when he was a kid. Which,
the soldier.
Nice.
Who I nailed.
Yeah, nice. I was definitely going to give you a shout out about that. But that implies that Henry lived his whole life in Bly Manor and had a friendly ghost. So it's just safer to assume that besides Peter, Rebecca Jessel, and the Lady of the Lake, everyone else so far is nice. So the last thing we get in this scene is while, again, Lady of the Lake is dragging Peter's body down the stairs, Peter puts his hand on Miles' shoulder. And that is the twist we've kind of been talking about since episode 1. We knew it was coming.
That's the explanation. It's possession.
He's trying to kind of like yell after the Lady of the Lake, and he leans on Miles, and then Miles starts also yelling after the Lady of the Lake. It was really well done that they finally made it that obvious, like slap us in the face with it. He's getting possessed by Peter.
And the choreography was really good when, like, you know, Peter's looking at his hands and Miles is looking at his. They're standing right next to each other, like trying to figure this out.
I do want to say that this kind of twist was amazing. It was really well done, and it was the payoff was earned. But the reason I think that when this season's done, we're still going to say The Haunting of Hill House was better was because The Haunting of Hill House twists were not something we could see even remotely happening in episode 1 or 2 versus this. We were talking about it in the first podcast episode. And to me, this twist was, I don't want to say obvious because that sounds like I'm putting the writers down, because it's not like that at all. It was still well done. It's just, it wasn't a mind fuck. It was just a good twist.
Yeah, I do tend to agree. But like you said, it doesn't make it a bad thing. It's just the bent neck lady. That was something where you could never see that coming in episode 1. There was nothing that alluded to that. And you didn't get that reveal until, what was it, episode 5. And when it happened, I still had nothing to do with it. To end the scene that we were just talking about 25 minutes ago, the Lady of the Lake drags Peter into the lake. He's donezo, and Mrs. Gross is there observing it. She turns around and sees Rebecca Jessel for a split second. Then we get smash cut back to the interview with Owen.
But real quick, we did see at this point that the Lady of the Lake had no face or eyes.
Yes.
That was the moment we saw it, which is always creepy.
And here's the reason I think Charlotte might be Lady of the Lake now, is because we see Charlotte with that white kind of flowy doily dress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what the Lady of the Lake is doing. Okay, stick a pin in that one.
Yep.
Back to the interview with Owen. Again, they're kind of recalling, we've done this before, haven't we, et cetera, et cetera. Owen actually seems a little bit pissed now. He's starting to get, maybe losing his patience. Was anybody else picking up on that?
Yeah, definitely.
The spirits, you can say, are getting more aggressive and trying to shove this message into Hannah Gross's face. What we have is Owen saying, I totally got Into the Spider-Verse vibes here, because at the end of their conversation, he goes, all right, let's do this one more time.
Did he really?
And he's just reiterating that something is very wrong with Miles. Focus on Miles. And that kicks us over to Hannah.
Well, you get the quote, okay, too. Owen looks at Hannah and is telling her, like, you are Hannah Gross. The year is 1987. You're at Bly Manor. Like, this is what she's repeating to herself at the end. I guess
Miles is 8, or Miles is 10, Flora is 8.
Yeah, I don't know why this was important, but
it's important because
I think it kind of creates like a rock for her, like just to make to get her back to a certain point, maybe. I don't know.
No, I like that. And it comes up at the very last quote of the episode as well.
Yeah. So after we see all that, it's Hannah going to the well, seeing... Does she actually see Peter?
Yeah.
So she sees Peter. She sees Peter and Miles by the well. I guess Peter's teaching Miles how to smoke, whatever. And Mrs. Gross is saying, get away from him, like all this stuff. You're a bad man, blah, blah, blah.
Because she's under the impression that Peter is not dead and that he's there going to mess with the Wingraves again.
Correct.
Yes.
And then it's finally revealed that he's actually in Miles' body when he again puts his hand on Miles' shoulder as he's saying a sentence, and then Miles finishes that sentence. So Mrs. Gross finally realizes that he is trapped in the body. She makes a comment like, why don't you leave? And he's just like, I would love to leave. And he physically can't. And you know why.
Because he's dead. And Mrs. Gross kind of comes to that conclusion finally. But it is short-lived because Miles, who is being possessed by Peter, pushes her into the well. She snaps her neck.
Horrible scene.
Sees the recurring crack at the bottom of the well.
But at the same time, as it was happening, I was just thinking that it makes so much sense.
You knew that was the episode one scene right when we got to that scene, right? Before Danny even walked up. Yes. So we get this zoom out to Hannah looking down the well, and she's a little bit discombobulated. And Miles asks, what's happening? Says, I'm having the strangest dream. And that's means that he is no longer being possessed. He's starting to come to. Peter is gone.
And cue Danny arriving.
But it's very important that we know as audience members that when Miles is being possessed by Peter, Miles has no idea what's going on. Because he's not aware of what he did. It's not like he's taking a back seat or anything like that. He's just in a daze.
I think it's important to note that he experiences it as a dream. Even Owen, as a memory, was saying in the previous scene, talking about memories versus dreams. So Miles, I think, thinks of everything as his dreams, whereas, you know, Flora will experience memories.
Yeah. Yeah, he does call it, I'm having the strangest dream, is what he says.
Mm-hmm. And so when Miles meets Danny, which is the scene we get in episode one again, he is acting like a gentleman. And the only reason I bring this up is because we were right to talk about the difference between when Miles calls Danny either Danny or Miss Clayton.
Yeah.
We were on the right track. And I think every time he refers to her as Miss Clayton, he's being the rich Englishman gentleman that he was raised to be from boarding school, versus when he's Danny, he's just trying to mess with her. And he's more formal when he's Miles.
Right. That's what I mean.
And then this flashes us back to the bonfire for the last time. And this is the end of the Paris conversation. But this time it takes a turn.
Owen's just talking about Paris again. And finally, Miss Gross agrees and says, yes, Owen, I'll go to Paris with you. Then it's a really quick jump to Owen is standing up and he does that dad joke. Alcohol you later.
I'm using that.
Yeah, I love that. Alcohol you later. And Miss Gross kind of follows him and says, didn't you hear me? I do want to go to Paris with you. And is pleading for him and Jamie to wait. Jamie arrives and says it's time to drive home. And Mrs. Gross is upset and she's pleading for him to stay. And she keeps reiterating the line that Owen dropped to her. You are Hannah Gross. The year is 1987. You are at Bly. Miles is 10. Flora is 8. And she says that a couple times over. And then the last time she loses it midway through. And that's our end credit scene.
Damn.
Great episode, honestly.
It was a lot of answers, specifically for Miss Gross, obviously. But we did get some good information about the Lady of the Lake. We got a lot more background between Jessel and Quint, like all their issues that they had going on. And we also got some more information on the powers of the kids, being Miles having being possessed, and you know how Flora and Miles handled talking about the Lady of the Lake when she was in the house and the other ghosts, all that stuff. It was an information dump with a good twist.
Even though we knew it, this episode was the official reveal of the possession Peter on Miles. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I feel like us podcasting through the first four episodes was just trying to pick out the Easter eggs that we already knew the possession was.
Yeah, I agree. So if we're ready, we could jump right into episode six, because this is going to be a wild one. And I really enjoy all of the Henry Wingrave we get in this episode.
Yeah.
He does a lot of good filling in the blanks behind the background of, I mean, filling in all the context that happened before our Danny story started, especially with the parents, of course. We yep. start this episode with Henry Wingrave in his lawyer office and another hot mama voiceover.
Lord Wingrave greatly preferred the confines of his office to the comfort of his London flat. And that was, I think that was literally it.
It was a short one. So,
he trapped himself there day and night, never leaving.
It starts with Henry's secretary giving him an update, walking through into his office and telling him about Danny and the children. And Danny's always constantly calling him, and it becomes a theme that he just never pays any attention to the kids unless he says specifically later, someone's hurt. And this is the scene that we first get Henry's personal ghost that is for life has been with him, not life, since the end of the, you know.
Yeah. Since the accident, since he found out about the accident, that was when.
I like to call him Smiles or all Smiley.
Right, Evil Henry is what I did, but we can call him Smiley.
The subtitles good. Called him Alter Ego, but like Smiley's fine.
Shout out Miss Friedman. She called me Smiley.
That is so true. Holy shit.
Oh, wow. Me and
memories.
I also, in my notes, called him like Evil Hugh a million times. That might have been because the he's Evil always Hugh, not Henry.
That
might
have been the second Miss Friedman shout out on this podcast.
No way. Yeah, good for her. I love that.
Okay.
We get a flash to Henry at Bly. Yes.
Mm hmm.
And we see Dominic is coming in kind of a rush. And I didn't get any of the dialogue, but the point is Dominic is coming back from a trip and Charlotte is in labor about to give birth.
To Flora. And as Dominic rushes into the, what do we keep calling it? The
foyer.
No, I'm sorry. The wing. We've just been
calling it the wing, I feel like.
They refer to it as the old wing, but old in wing. This memory, if it is not the old wing. It's just the wing, the parents' wing.
If you're thinking of the parapet, that I think that actually means like the balcony or whatever, but that was the
name. That's the area, though, of the house. So when Dominic rushes to the main master bedroom, Henry is actually leaving the room, which is our first sign that we're supposed to, you know, by the end of the episode, pick up on that he's a little sketchy.
Yeah, usually an uncle wouldn't be in the delivery room. That's a little weird.
Right, and I don't think we get anything more before we flash back to modern day at Bly, right?
Correct.
And this has us seeing Flora laying on just a random part of the grounds of Bly Manor, and then we flash quickly to Danny inside Bly, and she's bringing coffee to Jamie, doing her best flirty impression. And
so American of her, bringing coffee.
What did you guys think about their relationship before this episode? Because I want to know what your opinions are on that.
I think, at least when we were talking about it in the last episode, I think we were all on board for these two being a couple. Like, it's obviously really good for Danny, and obviously, as we will later learn, it's really good for Jamie as well. So I'm all on team Jamie.
I think they planted the seeds for this ship a couple episodes back, honestly. So I was hoping it would go this way.
I started this episode, before we get all of these interactions, thinking that I was fine with it. I didn't love it, didn't hate it. It was always awkward, especially because of the spec scenes, but whatever.
Yeah.
But by the end of this episode, I was banging my fist on the table, diehard stan for Danny and Jamie. I loved every second of it. I know Kathleen is just going to fucking love the shit out of these two and their relationship.
We were shipping them just mainly because everything in the last episode 4, I think it was just... She pointed to her being a lesbian. Like, she knew for a while, well, who knows if she's lesbian or bisexual, whatever it is, but we knew she had those issues. And so,
I think that's what it is. I think she is a full lesbian because that's the point.
Yeah.
That's why she had to break off the marriage to her husband.
And it was well known. So her finally being able to find somebody that can fit her personality, I think is really good for her.
And I fucking love Jamie. This is the episode that made her my favorite
top
character.
Top two.
Her. Yeah, I'll take it.
Dominate.
She's great. So anyway, back to what I was saying, where Danny's bringing Jamie the coffee. They're getting their flirt on. She's getting her flirt on. It's a little obvious.
It's one way, yeah.
Jamie picks up on it real quick.
Yeah. It's like, it's 6 a.m. Why are you up? You've been up for a while just to make a cup of shitty coffee. You're not just here to, you know, talk, basically. What are you actually here for?
And Danny says something along the lines of, I didn't like how we ended it. And Jamie says, how did we end it? And Danny says, wrong. We ended it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would start anew with a cup of coffee.
Which she's also shitty at making.
Is she?
Yeah, that's what she says. Yeah,
she spits the coffee right back in the drink.
There's no such, as an avid coffee drinker, there is no such thing as a bad cup of coffee.
I think she uses a lot of cream and sugar. Based on that first episode of how she made the tea.
The tea was
lots
disgusting.
Lots of cream and sugar.
I don't even like tea, but I know that was the wrong way to make tea.
So there's not much to pick up on the flirting, but there's one thing I wanted to point out. Danny is offering to take Jamie to the bar in Bly. Is it county or town?
I think it's county. I think it's Bly County. No.
Whatever the town is.
I know Owen has referred to it as a town. I'm not sure what they referred to it in this scene, but I think it's a town.
Okay. In the town itself. And I think that's important because Jamie goes on to say, you know, I live above the bar. And I think that's important because that's leading me to believe that Jamie's not a ghost. She can leave Bly Manor.
I agree.
So
I'm under that impression as well.
Yep. It's important
to say
Owen
too, for that same reason, I think.
Which
I don't think Owen is a ghost, but
I don't either.
The tie-in with Mrs. Gross, I think more
is
that was Mrs. Gross was projecting an Owen that is woke to some of this.
Completely.
But I think Owen and Jamie are in the clear for not being ghosts.
And we voiced our opinions in this early saying we would have been upset if all of the help was just dead. That would have not have been cool. I wouldn't have liked that. And I'm way more comfortable with just being Hannah Gross. And then Owen and Jamie, who are my two homies, are good to go. So at the end of their flirting, or I guess mid-flirting, Danny looks out into the yard and sees Flora laying on the grounds, walking kind of just mindlessly around. And
I think she's walking towards the lake, right? Not into the lake.
Was it?
No, she wasn't walking.
No, okay.
She was literally just walking to, it wasn't to the road, but she definitely wasn't. But I thought it was the lake too, but it definitely was.
She looked like she was sleepwalking.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
And she was. So they run out as fast as they can, find out what's going on. And Flora instantly says that she does not feel good. And she is seeing Miss Jessel. Yeah. We're seeing it from her perspective. Miss Jessel's ghost is right there in her black dress, which matches her doll. And
no one else can see her. And she reaches her hand out, touches Flora on the head. And Flora is now in her bed, waking up from that experience.
Okay, so we get the reveal later. But were you guys thinking Miss Jessel possession right here, right now? Was this the confirmation?
It didn't feel like possession
I don't think possession, especially at the end.
Because what Peter does to Miles is different than what Jessel does to Flora.
Yes.
It's more...
But the thing is, though, Danny can see...
Is it, though?
Both of them, though. I think by the end of this episode, we know that Danny can see both Peter and Miss Jessel.
Well, I think anybody can see anybody if the ghost wants to be seen.
Agreed. Wants to be seen, okay.
And Jessel wanted to be seen by Flora in the scene that you're referencing.
And she didn't.
But, and Danny just walked up and
accident?
She was in.
Yeah, that was an accident.
But it feels more that
she didn't.
It feels more that Jessel is manipulating Flora as opposed to physically being in her body. And that checks out, too, with how even Miles thinks it's weird later in this episode when she's walking down and saying, I forget all this. I didn't remember that, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's different. But it's similar.
Yeah. Okay. But in this particular instance, we get Miss Jessel gives Flora the old Itachi forehead tap.
Yep.
And that sends her back into a flashback. And it's a flashback of this little boy opening and walking into her closet in her bedroom. And he turns around and he has no face. And this startles Flora and the boy goes running.
Startles me.
Yeah. Startles everyone. Yeah. True. The boy does not go running. Flora goes running, screaming for her mom, and she gets to Charlotte's bedroom, and Henry is coming out of there, buttoning up his shirt.
Something just went on in there.
They were throwing that in our face right there. But question is, are we supposed to be under the impression that that is Flora's first interaction with a ghost ever?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
I think so, too. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything there.
I would agree with that statement. Mm-hmm. But I think Henry kind of smooths over the situation. Young Flora questions it at first. Why is Henry in the bedroom?
I didn't leave last night. I stayed the night in a guest room. I'm just I just came to say good morning to your
quickly
mom.
Says, but I heard you saying something about someone with no face.
Plays it off well.
Yeah, definitely.
For someone who's cheating.
I took the note this early. I took the note. I said, is he the goddamn father of the children? At least Flora. So I was happy with my guess there.
Good call. I was thinking something was amok.
It wasn't obvious
crazy
to me at this moment, but when he got the house for her, the dollhouse, that was when I was like, that's a lot.
Anyway, they all go to investigate the closet and the little boy is gone. And Charlotte, the mom, handles this imaginary friend situation very well. I hope I handle it this good when I'm a parent. She says, well, if there's a little boy with no face and you're the only one who can see him, perhaps he'd like to be your friend.
Yeah.
And she's encouraging her to be friends with this imaginary friend, even though we know it's an actual ghost. Flora says there's something wrong with him. His face isn't finished. And that's where we get Henry suggesting that Flora should give this unfinished ghost a story like he did with this soldier in Bly Manor when he was younger.
Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty, is it safe to assume at this point? Well, not safe to assume, but like I was assuming at this point in time that he also is experiencing something that like Flora and Miles are going through, where he was seeing ghosts.
It at least alludes to he did back when he was younger.
100%. And that's why we brought up, I said it earlier in the episode, but now with a little bit more context, Brian, when you were going through all the way back when we initially got introduced to the dollhouse and we were going room by room, you pointed out there was a soldier ghost in there. So all the way back in episode one, that is...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I called it out.
Okay. That's Wingrave's ghost, Henry Wingrave's ghost.
There was a really good scene in episode one where they pan from room to room in the dollhouse and all of the dolls are shown.
Do you think we're going to get any more of that backstory?
What I was just going to say is, even if we don't, it was already enough payoff just off of that alone. I think
so too. Yes.
If we don't ever see the soldier ghost, that's fine. I don't care.
I think we will, though. I think we're going to start... Some of these ghosts are going to start revealing and interacting with the living people.
Definitely. And we know Henry's on his way to Bly Manor at the end of this episode. Boy, so that's going to be a thing.
Do we know if, like, is this supposed to be like Hill House, where it's going to be like one and done season? That's it.
Yeah, it's an anthropology series. So every season's going to be a standalone.
We also get that the dad is in Scotland on a trip right now. And that's why Henry is being shiesty, I guess.
Yeah.
The dad's away.
Then they start having a meta conversation, and Flora herself is realizing that she's in a memory again.
For lack of a better term, Flora starts to question the nature of her reality.
Damn, with the references on this binge time show. Yeah.
Dude, this is a meta conversation.
Charlotte is aware of her being a memory, and she's asking, like, I'm supposed to be five here, not
she
eight.
She starts
Why
to
am
have
I not
the
five?
Conversation with her mom and says, I'm getting tucked into another memory again. And as soon as I realize it, I'm just going to wake up. And she wakes up in present day, right?
Yeah.
And this is Danny and Jamie. Well, it's a little bit
1987, which is the audience is present day.
Jamie and Danny are right outside or in Flora's bedroom.
Yep.
And what they find out or tell her is that she fainted. And as soon as she, you know, is talking to them, realizes that she says she's tired, she wants to go back to sleep. So we instantly get another transition.
I like this though, because she says, I have to go to sleep to dream this time, not to go into a memory. Mm-hmm. Because as far as they know, she's been sleeping because she's passed out.
Yeah.
But yes, this takes us to
Henry's office again. And he is told that by, I think, his secretary again, that Flora is sleepwalking. He does not show any empathy, really. He knows that he's banished from Bly Manor, so he can't really do anything about it unless it's a life or death situation. So I guess that's the reasoning behind him just saying fuck off to the secretary every time she comes in.
I think it's also important. We've also forgot to mention it. I don't know if this will be important, but the letter that he gets, because we do get glimpses of it throughout the episode. In the very first scene, as we talked about, the secretary delivers a letter and it's for Dominic. And here we get another glimpse of him, like, kind of after the secretary leaves and he's kind of contemplating his decisions, what he should do. He looks at the letter again, and I think he tries to make a phone call.
They talk about it a little bit later. I'll bring it up when we get to that scene, but it might pay off for something.
Yeah.
So that first flashback to Henry's office, I guess, is present day, because it's talking about Flora and Miss Clayton's report on Flora.
Right.
And then we instantly flash back to a couple years back.
Henry is calling Bly Manor looking for Charlotte. So it's long enough ago that the parents are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And Flora picks up. And Henry obviously called looking for Charlotte, but shifts the conversation to something that would be appropriate with Flora and says, have you seen the little boy again? And this is where we get Flora saying no. And Daddy says that he's just a new kind of mint, a fig mint of my imagination, which Luke said, you want to call this ghost
Figment until we find it. I like it.
Yeah, I like Figment. Yeah, that's fun.
Because he will come up again.
Right. And Henry says, even Figments need stories too, so maybe you should give him a story still. And this is where Flora hands the phone over to Dominic, who starts to question, what's all this about needing to make up stories? What are you talking about, Henry?
And you could tell Henry is thrown off that Dominic is even there.
Yes.
He thinks he's still away on another business trip, lawyer trip, whatever he was doing. Like, at this point, to me, it was obvious that there was an affair at least going on.
Yeah.
And I did not get the vibe that Dominic picked up on anything in this phone call. He was, by the end, was a tiny bit weirded out.
I was going to say, by the end of the phone call, there was probably a glimpse of it. Because he was just like, how did you know I was away? And then that's when, you know, Henry's being like, oh, I figured it out on my
Henry
own.
Henry was flustered with the white lie and, that he told to
and
get
then
out
he, And then when Dominic hangs up the phone, he also sees his wife standing there and then just walk away. So
yeah,
kind of questioning some mm-hmm. things. I don't think he knows fully yet that it's an affair.
Right. And then we're back in the office. It's nighttime and Smiley shows up and they're drinking because Henry drinks every single night. It seems like that's been a thing since the parents' death. And it's kind of funny because the ghost, Smiley, also drinks. Like, he yeah, takes the glass and physically yeah. moves it and stuff, which is cool. And I would like to point out that Henry is not scared or surprised at all that he's there, which, again, implies that he's been there for years. He's kind of numb to the ghost. He's ghost woke as fuck now.
Yes.
And been ghost woke as fuck. If he had Soldier Boy, like, this shouldn't be anything new to him.
Right. And that's why I'm so excited to get him back in Bly Manor, because I think he's going to be like the ghost expert and be able to identify all of the weird stuff that's been happening at the manor. So this is,
yeah,
think
this he's is gonna exciting.
Do you think he's going to cry when he gets reunited with Soldier Boy at Bly Manor?
I hope so.
Soldier Boy?
Yeah. You.
No, or Soldier Boy from the
His
Boys.
His name's totally Soldier Boy. We don't even know Soldier Boy yes, from the Boys. Boy. Yeah, the ghost name is Soldier Boy, and this is making me think that we are going to get that reunion, actually, now that Henry is going back to the manor. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that later.
We get a couple of info dumps here from Smiley. Right away, we find out that this doesn't make sense to me now, looking back, but Peter robbed the Wingraves of $250,000. And he was talking about how it was Miles' money, but how is that possible if Peter never left the property with, is it the jewel?
No, I picked up on that as well. I wasn't sure if there was going to be an extra layer to someone actually taking money from the Wingraves, because he died before he could actually take any money.
But
unless that necklace
he did
was,
have the jewel.
Unless I'm not that necklace entirely was sure that that's true, because think back to the episode where he gives Rebecca the coat. I feel like it's alluded to that he's been slowly smuggling stuff out.
I could buy that.
For a couple months. And after a couple months, he finally started to reveal to Rebecca. But he had been doing that for a while.
Sounds good.
And then it's also revealed in this episode. I at least wrote down, maybe it's not explicit here, but I picked up on the calls. The ghost calls that have been happening throughout mm-hmm. this entire season. And every time someone in Bly Manor answers, no one's there. It's Henry. It's been Henry. Yes.
We didn't know when we were at least talking about him 3 and 4. We had no guesses.
Did you guys think the same thing we did, that it was supposed to be Dan? Once Danny picked it up, someone would talk, but she did pick it up and
no
one talked.
We were talking specifically about like how when Danny picked up, there was something weird there, but I don't think we pieced together that it was.
Of course not. But my question, I mean, that would have been really hard to find out, because I was convinced that it was going to be Danny related, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
But
I thought it was Danny related.
Didn't Flora pick it up once? Didn't Flora answer the phone?
She does. At least
and I thought that was
no,
the goal.
She does, at least in episode 1 or 2. She at least picks it up, Flora residence, but I think it was like an actual phone.
No, Smiley comments on that, because the goal was to be able to hear Flora talk, not to engage in a conversation with her.
Oh, that's it.
Okay. Smiley said something like, just to hear her say, Flora residence, one last
that's
time.
Exactly what
and
it
yes,
is.
He wouldn't respond, and that's why Smiley is the one bringing it up, because he's his inner demons.
But and yeah, Dave, this is another directly links to the letter we were just talking about. Smiley tells him that he's been avoiding drafting a notice of death for his brother Dominic. And I think that's what that letter was. Like, he didn't want to send it out. I think Smiley specifically says because it closes the door on that whole parent situation, basically taking away his guilt, and he feels like he has to live in it or something.
So you think the letter itself is not worth anything? It's just
a representation of him not moving forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the conclusion of this scene is him deciding not to mail it out, correct?
Yep. Yes.
Cool. So the next scene we have is Danny and Mrs. Gross checking in on Flora, who has been sleeping all day. And Mrs. Gross is adamant, as per usual, because now we know the reveal that she's been dead the whole time. So it's kind of funny now when we see her dazed and confused entering.
It's like
scene.
We know why.
Because we know why.
That's like, it was so much relief when we get that. When we got that.
And Danny asks, we miss you this afternoon. What were you up to? And she says, oh, well, I don't really remember what I was doing all day, because
I love being in on the inside joke.
So do I, 100%.
So do you think her body actually is transported with each time loop, or do you think she just kind of does a Flora thing where she sleepwalks?
It's her consciousness, I would say, is because all of these events already happen, so her body's not going anywhere. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and when we're
just reliving them.
When we see her, a lot of the scenes in the early episodes, she just has the blank stare in her face and isn't doing anything. So that's what I'm envisioning is happening when she's living through these memories. They're she's just standing there like...
Just, like, even this is just a memory for her, at least, right?
By the way, she does a great job of acting out a person who doesn't know where the fuck they are or what the hell's going on with her. She does a great job of acting just dazed and confused. Danny says that she called Henry, but he didn't call back. And Mrs. Gross says, well, Henry's not exactly himself anymore. Since Dominic and Charlotte went on that trip, none of them really came back. Obviously, the parents died. But ever since then, Henry has not been himself. So don't take it personally that he's not responding. This is pretty much par for the course since the trip. Mrs. Gross goes downstairs and Danny goes in to tuck in Flora. And as she walks away, there's a little boy playing with the dolls.
Figment
is playing with the dolls. Yes, confirmed. And when Danny turns around, he is gone. So,
okay, let's talk about this real quick, because I think this is everything that Jimmy has wanted. I think that anytime the dolls are moving, it's Figment is the one moving these dolls into the rooms that they
again going to fill you guys in on the last podcast, but yeah, we were trying because we weren't sure if the dolls were physically moving themselves or if they were like moving as the people were moving, but now it's 100% confirmed it's Figment who's doing all
Figment is the one keeping tabs on the house.
That's awesome, but doesn't Flora move them too sometimes?
Sure, but I think it's safe to assume.
I think it's more at night when she does it, and when it's during the day, Flora uses them for like actual dolls, you know.
Yeah,
I think
We were in the first two episodes for the podcast. We were saying we had no idea if they were moved, like you're exactly as your discussion probably went.
Yeah,
and I'm really happy we got an answer. Jimmy's gonna love that.
Yeah,
okay. I'm sure he was thrilled.
Yeah, he was talking about that. And he wanted to know some answers.
Do you think Figment is doing this just to like help out Flora? So
I mean, they're friends now, so potentially. True.
Just so she can wake up and be like, okay, Lady of the Lake is here.
Don't think it needs to be deeper than it's Figment. You know, like, you know how things don't need to be explicitly explained.
But. True. I think it's Figment trying to help let them know what everything is going on in the house.
So Danny goes down into the kitchen and she finds Owen and Hannah talking, to Danny's surprise.
Jamie is kind of in her street clothes, you know, as a graphic tee on. She's looking good, but she had already left for the night and she came back after driving halfway and just, what does she say? Something nice, like didn't want to be alone tonight or like wanted to see Danny again.
Implying that she came
back for Danny.
And Jamie wants to make a gesture. And so what she does is she brings Danny outside to a secret spot on the Bly grounds. She gives this whole little speech about, even though that Bly is such a big place, there's not a lot of secret spots, but this is my secret spot.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of character building for Jamie, and I loved every part of it. 100%. I think she's the best.
Yeah, I don't think it upsets me because I think this is our Jamie episode. I don't think we're going to get a Jamie-centric episode, but this is enough. Yes, very satisfying backstory for Jamie.
We get her whole family backstory. I'm not going to go into the details. Her father was a minor, whatever. The mom was a slut.
18 when she had the first child, so we know that
she has a bastard little brother. All that it basically goes to show that Jamie has a really messed up background that makes her such a strong person. She even goes to say that she got into trouble when she left London, and she even spent some time in jail. And in jail is where she found her love for gardening. And what I thought at this point of the conversation was why this explains a lot as to why she freaked out at Miles over cutting the flowers prematurely all the way back in episode 1 and 2, because she says in the scene when she's talking about what's it called? The moonflower. There's such a particular way with flowers. You have to give them care for not a lot of like all of this stuff. And I think that's why she was so mad at Miles for cutting the flowers, even though it was Peter at the time. But do you remember that scene? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, she treats the flowers like people. She makes that. She's like, yeah, people are the same way. Like, you'll put in all this work and effort for people.
It's not worth it.
And including myself. Like, I put all this work in for me, and it just never pays off.
At this part in the scene, I kind of had a thought, and you guys might absolutely hate me. Specifically, Kathleen's going to hate me for saying this. But I had a thought that I kind of wish Jamie was the main character and Danny was the side character again, because I just love Jamie's personality.
Jamie had an MC worthy backstory. You know, she could have definitely been the MC of the show.
She could have gotten the shit haunted out of her. Come on.
I'm fine with I like Danny. They're both great
characters.
I don't
think she's out of the woods. I think she is going to get the shit haunted out of her could. Because we think she's still alive and the living get the shit haunted out of them.
But we get some nice kissing scenes.
Yeah, Danny and Jamie are making out. And that's the conclusion of the Danny-Jamie scene. And then we get a cut to Charlotte and Henry, who are about to make out, and they're in Bly Manor at the time.
This is like a really, really quick scene because I thought it was the end of them making out or something, and she kind of leaves the screen, and then Smiley steps in, right? And they're face-to-face, like an inch apart.
I kind of thought he was like at the office still, and he was like imagining Charlotte there. And then it was just Smiley.
Okay, that's probably what it was.
Yeah, that's how I took it, but I legitimately was a little confused.
No, that's 100% what it is, because Smiley doesn't arrive, we find out, until Charlotte and Dominic are dead.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, this is a memory that Henry is recalling with Smiley.
And now we skip right to Flora's birthday. And this, Dave, if you want to take this, I know you were you had some notes on that.
Yeah, this was just, this is where I kind of first started seeing Flora was going to be the daughter, right? So we get introduced to Henry just at the Bly Manor. He has this big dollhouse with him. It's Flora's birthday. I don't know if it mentions what birthday it is for her, not that it matters even, but Charlotte comes into the room and, you know, is observing the house, really, you know, admiring it, thanking Henry for the big contribution.
I think Peter helps out here too, right? Anyway. Wasn't Peter in this scene for a second? Peter helped bring it in.
I didn't know that either.
But regardless, she's admiring it, and you know, they kind of end up standing next to each other as they're looking at the dollhouse. Henry kind of makes a move onto Charlotte, you know, kind of touching his pinky on hers, and she says, "Not here." And they kind of walk away from each other for a second, and they look at the top of the stairs, and it is Dominic watching them kind of have this flirtatious moment. Very creepy.
Henry gets all weird, says, "I'm not going to be at the party tonight." And Dominic, being even weirder, just doesn't really say much. He's just looking at the two of them. You could tell he's figuring it out if he hasn't already at this point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I knew shit was about to go down for Henry Wingrave.
So they both leave awkwardly, and Dominic is left there standing alone in the foyer, just staring at the dollhouse.
And the next scene we get is those two characters, Charlotte and Dominic. This time it's in the kitchen a little bit later, probably that same day.
I really liked the scene. I really did.
Yeah, it's great because Dominic handles it very rationally
was great.
Yeah, he prepared. And up until this point, I thought Henry was cheating and I never root for that, but I thought he was the better match for Charlotte until this scene where I'm like, oh, Dominic's not a bad guy. He's logical. He's rational about it.
Do we already know for a fact at this point, or did they ever explicitly say that Dominic and Henry are just brothers that run a law firm together? Is that what it is?
I think never said it, but that's what it seems to be.
Yeah.
And so they're just the partners that run the law firm, which eventually splits.
And I kind of took it as Dominic owns a majority.
Peter is coming in at the beginning of the story when we get introduced to Peter back a couple episodes ago. He's trying to come in and take that position now that he's gone, right? Because he tells Rebecca, Henry's never going to make me partner.
Going into this conversation, we figure out that Flora is not Dominic's kid. He's basically talking about how Charlotte was telling him at the end of the pregnancy that Flora was an early arrival, and he was kind of doing the math on it. Yeah, yes, she was early, but she wasn't a below average size for a baby. And he was he never wanted to piece that together. But when he did the actual math of the night of conception, it was while he was in Rome.
In Russia. He does a really noble job of taking some responsibility for always being gone, which again is what we're saying. And Dominic's a good character.
I like that because he's you were lonely, weren't you? Like, I go on all these business trips.
I think he would have understood and let her off the hook if that's all it was. That part didn't bother him. He said, I was away. I totally understand. You were lonely. There's a silence. And then he says, but do you love him? And she starts to break down and cry. And that's obviously what the betrayal to Dominic is.
I also think he would have been able to get over it if it wasn't his fucking brother. If it was just a random person. Now we flash over to baby girl Danny again, and she's waking up next to Jamie the morning after. Whoa!
We have a nice hot mama quote. The au pair could not remember the last time she slept this well, and she thought perhaps she never had.
Loved it. Loved
that scene next to Jamie.
Loved seeing Danny.
She got to be her true self with a, you know, with a girl and not specs.
Mm-hmm.
And she does notice while she's getting out of bed to get dressed, there's this wicked scar on the back right shoulder of Jamie.
Is that going
to
be important?
That's going to be a thing. You didn't pick
that's she has been possessed so many times. That's friction burns from so many ghosts just placing their hands on her shoulder.
Could you imagine?
I'm seeing with my third eye, man.
But I am curious to know.
Imagine that.
I'm curious to know what the scar is a representation. We'll probably
and it's
get
definitely
it
a thing. They highlighted that.
Quick tangent here. I was totally expecting to see specs in this scene at some point.
Well, she looks in the mirror, not even to look at herself.
To see if
he's there and he's not.
And is that a combination of one, burning the glasses at the end of two episodes ago? Do you remember that was the last thing that she did? Is that her moving on? And then two, her being herself and actually loving someone that she internally wants to love.
I'm going
to
take my shot at this. Now that we're talking about it, I think we're going to get that actual scene between those two. I hope at least. But
which two?
Specs and Danny. I hope we flash back at some point. As you said, she throws the glasses in and she looks
the
over
glasses. Yes, the glasses burn and she says, looks like it's just you and me now. And we don't get what happens right after that because that's the end of the episode. Yes. Yeah. But I think this scene is confirmation that there was a resolution that came from the conversation between Specs and Danny.
Yep, is that there is resolution. And because she turns away from the mirror and she smiles. She's like, fuck yeah. Like, I'm
so yes, I would not be satisfied, to be honest, if we didn't get something else. Like, it was okay, symbolic, to burn the glasses and accept.
I think Specs is coming back still.
I really hope so.
I don't think he's out of it just yet.
And that's what I was trying to highlight. They left it open-ended to revisit that exact scene and see how it played
out.
That's what I
was trying
to give
say.
Us a satisfying
I'm sold. I want
closure.
That. I'm in.
Yep. Okay. And I hope they give it to us, too, because there wasn't really a satisfying closure to that. Mm-hmm. But as Danny is getting dressed, getting out of bed with Jamie... Well, Jamie's still asleep, but she's getting dressed and we see Flora out the window.
Sleepwalking again.
Yes. Yeah. So Danny rushes out and kind of shakes Flora, and Flora is frazzled, as we've seen her do before. And she says, I think I was tucked away again. And immediately we get Flora's point of view and she sees Rebecca in her black dress, who kind of moves in and taps her forehead again.
Quick question. Did any of you guys notice that fucking Flora, the reason she's so creepy at points when she's like in those little dazes is because her pupils cover so much of her eyes and she has really dark eyes. So it literally at points when she kind of squints a tiny bit, it looks like she's just all black eyes.
Yep.
And that's definitely, if you haven't noticed that yet, next time you see her, just be on the lookout for that.
I've never noticed that, but I think now
what's off about her, because she's always bubbly, happy. You know, she's not like Miles, who looks like a Damien creepy possessed motherfucker. Flora is, that's it. It's the eyes. But anyway.
But I think at this moment too is when I'm really starting to feel bad and sorry for Flora and really enjoy her character, to see where her role is in all of this, how she, because she's the mediator so far between everybody, between ghosts and living so far.
And so this time when Rebecca taps Flora's forehead, though, it's not sending her back into a memory. It literally is a possession, because we get Flora dropping this whole tucked away in a memory thing and says, oh, I don't know what I was doing out here. I kind of lost my way. Let's go back up to the manor and do normal things.
Okay. So then that's exactly what happens in the bathtub scene, right? When she just changes her whole vibe when saying, oh, Miss, you shouldn't be wearing that. And then she's like, oh, it's fine. And then she just changes the subject completely. She's done that a couple times. Yep. And now that you're saying that, that's exactly what that is.
Okay, I have a theory that whenever she says perfectly splendid, she's Miss Jessel, because in episode...
How did we not ever figure that out?
The first reveal...
Oh, my God.
I feel so
was
much
that
better.
An obvious...
No, yes. I'm saying because I can't believe I didn't think of that.
It was obvious to you. We didn't see it, yeah.
Chronologically speaking, the first time, 1985-wise, before where the events are currently taking place, the first time we hear someone say perfectly splendid is Miss Jessel, the first time she meets Flora. So I think that's the
thing. You sold me on that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
But now that's making me start to think that I guess it is more similar to Miles than I thought. How she just does get physically possessed.
We'll see. That's what I'm in this scene specifically, she totally gets physically possessed.
So let's keep going.
Right.
Next, we're back to
the office.
Henry's secretary coming in.
He gets heated and says, "I'm unavailable unless someone is hurt. Don't bother me with Bly Manor drama. Unless someone's hurt, don't tell me about it." The assistant walks back out the door and then he starts saying, fine, get her back on the phone. And he opens the door, trying to follow the secretary and get Danny back on the phone. But it's another flashback to Dominic splitting the partners of this law firm.
I was looking forward to this scene ever since Dominic found out.
I like him a little bit. He's got a way with words, man. He really lets Henry know that he's not a brother to him.
He's taken all of his shit out of the office. Doesn't he say you're allowed to keep your office? That's it. But I'm leaving. He says a lot of stuff. I don't know if you guys have the quotes, but it ends with, now you only have yourself, your real self, and he's a shit grinning fucking monster, isn't he? And he gets officially banished from the Bly Manor, from any contact with any of the family members.
It's really
a banishment.
I liked his rant, I guess, on him saying that it's going to be his daughter for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. It's like, she's my daughter in every way that matters. When the first time some asshole breaks her heart, it's going to be me that's there for her. When she's walking down the aisle at her wedding, it's going to be me, not you.
Well-written dialogue, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I wanted to point out, because Dominic specifically says he's a shit grinning fucking monster, isn't he? He described Smiley before Smiley
was Smiley.
Was projected by Henry.
Yeah.
Which actually is making me start to think it's a lot more similar to what Cheryl has going on in Hill House. It could be where it's not that he's a ghost, Mr. Smiley.
Yeah.
And it's more just what, do you remember what Cheryl had going on, where it was just it was just memories that were fucking with him.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So is Mr. Smiley, you think, a same kind of entity as the Lady of the Lake and Figment? No. You don't think so? You think it's just...
Only Henry would be able to...
Is Flora going to be able to see? Okay, that's what I was going to ask.
I think Bly Manor is a haunted house, and that only ghosts live there, and that what he is experiencing here outside of Bly Manor is separate.
So you don't think Flora would see...
No, I have reason to believe that Smiley might not be allowed in Bly Manor, because he was trying... We get to the scene, but Smiley tries very, 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 very hard to keep Henry from going to Bly Manor. That can't be true. We're going to see Smiley in Bly Manor. I take that back.
We'll find out.
Yeah,
we will find out.
Okay, but is that all we have for this Dominic scene?
Yeah, very good scene. Loved it.
So the next scene that we get is Flora and Charlotte. Charlotte, this is a flashback. Charlotte is leaving. Obviously, Charlotte's still alive. Charlotte is leaving for a few weeks, and Flora is upset. She wants to go with her. And Charlotte gives Flora a talisman to keep her safe while she's away. And Flora starts to come to and think, wait a second, I'm too old for this memory. This already happened. I'm tucked away again, aren't I? And then we flash to present day Flora, who goes downstairs and gets really upset at everybody, you know, Owen, Miss Gross, Danny, for eating dinner. And she says, why are you guys all eating without me? And they say, well, you already had dinner. We gave you soup. You've already ate. And
some of Owen's best work.
Yeah. And she keeps questioning, saying things like, I don't like this game. Make it stop. And the phone rings. Danny answers. And this is the reveal that it's Henry, I think, here.
It's for sure Henry. It's kind of hinted at before, because they're talking
implied.
About...
In this early
Smiley.
In this episode, it's kind of implied, because I think we do see a couple I don't know, actually. I think this might actually be the reveal. You're right. This might
be the
reveal.
This is the first time we have someone pick up the phone and it flashes to Henry holding the line.
Regardless, so the reveal, yeah.
I guess
it was
whatever.
Danny
it's
that
Henry,
picked up the phone this time, loser. Right?
Yeah, yes. Danny picks it up.
And she, you know, she answers saying it could be your uncle, and it was their uncle, but it didn't answer, so she hangs it up.
It was actually the uncle.
And then there's a knock on the door, and this triggers another flashback.
It's a flash to Henry and Charlotte is again leaving someone, but it is her apologizing to Henry for everything, saying, I should have told you that Flora was your kid. I should have done a lot of things differently. She reveals that Charlotte and Dominic are going to be taking a trip to India to renew their wedding vows or renew their honeymoon, whatever. But she did feel obligated to say goodbye because, you know, it's the end of a relationship. And she says, I'm going to try and make this marriage work for the kids.
Proceeds to give a long smooch to Henry as she leaves the door.
And Henry walks to follow her out. And it changes to present day with Smiley.
And Smiley, man, he has a couple moments here where he just controls the scenes.
Yeah.
For just for the actor, that had to be so fun to do.
Yeah.
He just has to smile as hard as he can and just act evil as shit, just bringing on these memories. He is going to, the next memory that Smiley is going to bring up is the night that they met, meaning Smiley and Henry. And this is when the phone starts ringing again, and he tells him, you know, you have to answer that phone. We're going to live through this memory again.
It's the British consulate in India, and they have terrible news. And Henry knows what's coming. Smiley knows what's coming. And yes,
we know what's coming.
This is reliving the night that Smiley came to be.
I really wanted to know what the accent was.
Yeah, so did I.
I thought he was going to say it, but he doesn't.
Do we not? We don't know that.
He's just in disbelief.
I don't know why.
He's just in disbelief.
I always thought it was a plane accident, just like plane going down.
Could be anything, but they didn't.
Well, they were already in India.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think. So. Do you think their death will be importance to the story? Do you think it's just they're just going to leave it as they're dead?
I think that's going to be it, but it could give us more, but I doubt it.
Yeah, because there's only what, three episodes after this, so.
Yeah, and what Smiley says to Henry.
That is a lot of episodes.
That's a lot of episodes.
So what Smiley says to Henry is he knows that that wasn't the worst of it. The worst of it is having to call Bly Manor and Flora being the one that picks up saying, Flora residence, and having to tell his daughter that her perceived parents are dead now. And it's his fault, and he knows that on the inside.
And he was egging him on too, saying like, and you're going to be the one to tell him like why they went on that trip, mm-hmm. and that you're basically the reason they are dead, layering on that guilt.
And yeah. I think we see Henry react to Smiley for the first time, like freaking out, as he should be.
Yes.
Because that was the first time he popped up physically in his life, yeah. which was good acting by our boy here.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so we get a flash to Flora's room, and it's Danny and Jamie are kind of hanging out outside there. Flora's sleep talking, and Danny invites Jamie to stay the night with her, but Jamie declines and says, you know, there will be other nights, which leads me to think that there might not be other nights.
I just hope she's just playing hard to get.
Same, yeah, I hope yeah, so too. Yeah, I hope.
You got to keep the passion there.
100%. And I think that was a quick one. So we go back to Henry and Smiley. Yes.
They had that quick conversation about the psychologist and having to send Flora there, and how Jamie, when she was younger, had her own psychologist and it really helped. So that's
right.
Danny's new plan. She was going to take her to a doctor, but she's going to consider that.
But yes, it is Henry in his office attempting to call Bly, but the phone's actually disconnected.
Right.
So there's no answer. And now he's kind of thinking something is actually going on there. Maybe I should go check it out.
And good for Henry, because he says, I'm going to Bly. And Smiley immediately says, no, don't do that. You're talking crazy. But he sticks to his guns.
But he does say it's a 3-hour drive and he's drunk as shit. So maybe Smiley's a good guy.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe Smiley's just the angel on his shoulder.
But question, is there anything that happened that we should know why the phone was disconnected?
No, that's what I was going to ask you guys, that question, because
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not
I
sure.
think maybe that the house is finally bringing it all together. You know, we have the final member of the Wingrave family coming in. So I think it's just setting up to just, I think it's forcing everyone to
Could
meet
be.
At the house.
There's nothing really to read into there if we don't have any other.
Nothing.
So then Flora wakes up to Figment moving the dolls again in the house, in the dollhouse. Mm-hmm. And when she tries to talk to him, because it seems like this is early in their quote unquote relationship. And she's trying to start a dialogue.
This is the second time she has seen them, because when Henry calls and says, have you seen the little boy again? She says no. So I think this is the second time she has seen him. And it's in the past.
Yeah. And as soon as Flora gets out of bed to talk to him, he starts sprinting away. And he sprints to the cellar.
To the attic. I thought.
But wasn't it?
I thought it was the attic. No, I actually have the scene up right now. She runs upstairs, so I'm assuming it's the attic.
But that doesn't, for some reason, I thought that where Figment was hiding was the same spot
as when he shifts.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so it's just another random collection of dolls. So then now my next question is, why didn't we see the other ghost that's been in the attic, the one that was laying on its side that was singing? All the way back in episode 2. Do you know that one?
This is years in the past, though. So maybe that same ghost isn't there. And we know, the ghosts move. Anyway.
This seems so creepy.
it's Flora following Henry's advice and trying to give him a story. And she takes off. It reminded me of the Office scene where Dwight cuts out the face of the CPR doll and puts it. But she takes a doll face and puts it on.
Let's take the creepiest Figment face and just put it on this. Figment honestly looked less scary with a shaved face than she did with the mask, in my mind. Mm-hmm.
But this brings me to my next point, because we also, B-Times, you pointed out when we were dissecting, analyzing the dollhouse from episode 1, there was the baby ghost.
Yes.
So that is this ghost. That Figment is represented by the big baby head that you saw, right?
I think so, yes. That would be the closest doll that resembled Figment.
Flora comes to the realization that she's in a memory again. Figment's kind of just, she's asking questions of Figment's like, I'm in a memory again, and once, Figment's kind of just nodding his head.
I like that once they start to realize it themselves, the ghosts start to help them out and they say, yes, you are, because Figment was nodding along mm-hmm. as she was kind of putting it all together.
And Flora's
and her mom did the same thing in the last time.
Yeah. Flora is begging Miss Jessel to stop doing this to her and pushing her to the side.
As she wakes up from this.
Which causes her to wake up in the bed, and she's calling out to Rebecca when she comes to. And Rebecca's there this time in her black ghost outfit. She's very cross with her.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm very cross with you. Rightfully so, too. Miss Jessel does not appear. She demands that she show herself. Flora's getting pissed, rightfully so.
Of course.
And right as Miss Jessel reveals herself to Flora,
and as Flora's asking her, like, why are you doing this to me? She's about to give an answer, and then cue Danny opening the door.
Danny opens the door, and Danny can see Miss Jessel as well for the first time. So she is completely spooked.
Loved this acting by her. She was horrified, and I was freaking out. I wasn't even nervous when the ghost was just there because I thought just Flora could see her. But the second Danny saw her, I got scared for some reason.
When Miss Jessel is there, she can see her, but other people can't. But in this scene,
if I'm being honest, I think every scene she has been standing behind the people.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe that is why. But
Brian, I think the ghosts have the option to show themselves to people other than the kids or not.
If I agreed with you now, I would be contradicting what I said earlier, that it was an accident because Miss Jessel was showing herself to Flora. Danny opened, and if two humans are in the room
she would
at
have
the
focused,
same time,
she would have made it so that even if Danny opened the door, Flora would still have only been able to see her. Is that what you're trying to say? It's a weird situation.
I don't know.
Yeah, but regardless, I think
it's not clear cut.
Danny's basically saying, Flora, come here. We got to get away from this thing. And Flora's trying to tell her, like, yes. No, she's actually, I don't know if she says trying to help, but she's like, no, she's a good person, I guess.
Yes. But Danny gets Flora out into the hallway and Rebecca follows them, I guess. So the three of them are out in the hallway and Peter is there, who looks up and sees Rebecca.
Right.
And he just says, this is awkward. Rebecca possesses Flora and uses her to run to the attic. Danny chases and Flora says,
I'm sorry.
To which Miles comes up from behind and whacks Danny with just a blunt object. And knocks
God damn.
Boy. I'm thinking Danny's dead.
No.
It's going to be her waking up coming
okay,
to.
Okay, I'm not yeah. thinking she's dead.
But I do want to pat myself on the back because I called something similar to this all the way back after listening to watching episode 1 and 2 in our first podcast. I did think that there was, even before we knew Peter's name was Peter, we're at this point calling him Luke because that was his character in Hill House. And I just thought it was always on the table that because the possession was so obvious that quote unquote Luke, who was Peter, was possessing Miles. I thought there was always going to be a chance that Miss Jessel could be the one that was controlling Flora in some way and influencing her, and they were reconvening in the afterlife in that way. I didn't get it in this exact context, but I'm just proud that there were some seeds planted early enough that part of this twist you could guess.
Yeah.
Well, fuck, man. That was two great episodes. That was easily the biggest cliffhanger end of an episode where I need to watch the next one like now. And I will, yeah. But I'm very excited. Yeah. Three more episodes, boys. Where the fuck are we going?
I think 5 and 6 were the episodes that finally I was just like, okay, I'm really in on the show. I've been enjoying it, even the first 4, but episode 5, it definitely gets taken up a notch. And yeah, the mystery is still there. There's still a lot of questions that need answering. And I, like Luke said, I'm probably going to go home and binge the next 2.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we're going to get a lot of answers. Obviously, it's coming to the season finale in the next couple episodes.
Cool. So we're going to continue our coverage of The Haunting of Bly Manor as it's already all released. We're going to keep recording. We're having a lot of fun with these episodes. We're going to try and crank them out as fast as possible. So keep an eye out for them. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
What a perfectly splendid episode.
I love you, Jamie.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.